Welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. Welcome to another amazing episode of the Voices of Courage show. When I was very young, I might have been 8 to 10 years old, I was hearing this little voice inside that said, always remember duality. Now, I'm young. I don't even know what duality means, right? I'm hearing this word. But as I grew older, I still, you know, I was wondering, what does that mean? Well, as of course, as I matured, I learned that it was the paradoxes of life, right? It's the understanding that we live in duality. We live in black and white, and up and down, and left and right, and backwards and forwards, and goodness and evil. And, you know, there's this whole paradox that we live in this world. And if you look around, those are the two polarizing places that we experience, right? We can experience, you know, and everything, of course, is on a continuum, right? I mean, let's, you know, you're either peaceful or angry, right? Well, at what level are you peaceful? At what level is your anger? You might be annoyed, you know, upset, you know, then going into anger and then blind rage. I mean, there's levels on all of this, right? So why are we going to talk about this today? Because I want you to be able to increase awareness, increase your understanding, even more than where you are. That's my hope, right? And also to be able to live in a place of more peace, more joy, more consciousness, more awareness, more wisdom, more courage, more in a place of bliss and happiness. All of this comes as a result of understanding how to transcend this duality, right? And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today. I have a very special guest today. He's going to be he's my first guest, I believe, that I've had on the show from Nigeria. So he's got some traditions, some understanding, some wisdom. So we're going to take a deep dive into the paradoxical ways of life. All right. I'm going to take a break. And when I come back, I'm going to have my guest.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is going to be an amazing show. My guest is Kui Nu. And I hope I'm getting that pretty close. For those of you, welcome, by the way.
Thank you so much. And that was close enough.
Shay Kuinu. Shay Kuinu is a Agile coach who enjoys exploring systems and stories that lead us to or away from suffering, individuality, collectivity as teams, organizations, or society. His professional role is complemented by his creative endeavors and interest in hypnotherapy as a tool to demystify our personal makeup stories. His interests have led him on a quest to explore the nuanced complexities of life, cultivating an appreciation for the profound yet often misunderstood depths, and so much more. So we're going to explore the so much more today. So, Shay, how did you get on this quest, this journey? What happened?
That's an interesting question, because for me, I've asked myself that question also, and I find it's been an evolution from, or I've been on this quest for probably all of my life. I feel like at some point we've all gone through that search for meaning, that search for that we question what it is to, what all of this is. And for me, it was more of realizing that I have moments where I'm very happy, and then there are moments that I'm very sad, and I notice that I want to stay in those pleasant moments forever. But then there's this other side of the human experience where, you know, bad news, you hear some bad news, or you fall ill, or you get heartbroken or something like that. And somehow it's like, how can I stay here longer than this? And I realized over time, there has to be an illusion in how we perceive these experiences of life, and that kind of led me down this rabbit hole of life.
Well, I really like that a lot. I mean, I want to give you a great example of that. So I signed up to ride 700 miles on a bike in 7 days. Oh, wow. Last year, and I started training with a group called called the Challenged Athlete Foundation, and so I would start, I would be going up these hills on this bike and feeling pain. And I asked that exact question. I thought, what is pain? What am I really feeling here? Can I transcend that pain? And the answer was, as soon as I became conscious of it and aware of it, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to start to love my pain. That's how I went. I'm going to start to love it and feel it and get in. Oh, I can hardly wait to go up that next hill because I get to feel. What happened was the pain transcended. It was not there. Weird, but true.
Yeah. You know, I usually say that pain, we can look at pain from two perspectives, the physiological pain and psychological pain. One of those are optional.
Well, I think suffering is optional. And, there are people that know how to transcend physical pain. There are people that know how to go to the dentist and not have any Novocaine and, you know, get their teeth drilled, right? It's possible, right? Mm-hmm. And, I think this conversation is exploring those possibilities. Mm-hmm. And definitely on the mental pain, you know, we create a lot of mental pain, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I started my book, This Glorious Dance, with the first chapter is called Illusion. And in Illusion, I talk about how the mind itself creates, because the mind is more or less a tool for comparison. It creates this dualistic effect that at the end of the day is the one that's responsible for how we see the past or how we see the future. And within that, that swing of past and future perception is where we actually experience a lot of pain. So if I was heartbroken, as an example, somehow I'm going to be seeing myself referring to the past or scared about the future. And in a lot of ways, that is really what perpetuates a lot of the pain that we feel.
100%. 100%. Let me, you have this amazing new book out. And it's called The Glorious Dance. That's why I had you on the show. I saw that the title. I went, The Glorious Dance. Oh, yeah, life is a glorious dance. Why are we trying to cut off duality, right? Why are we started trying to go, I only want pleasure. I don't want any pain. I don't want to feel anything. I just want to, you know, I want to go party and have fun and dance and drink and shop and eat. And yeah, I just want that side. I don't want the other side. I don't want to have to diet and work out and stop all my pleasures and, you know, and actually grow and become conscious. Who wants that, right? And how do we dance? How do we, you know, why did you write the book, The Glorious Dance? Let's start there.
Yeah, so to what I said earlier, one of the things that I noticed is is that our dualistic experience of, you know, good and evil, of sadness and happiness, of wealth or poverty, or, you know, weakness or strength. And I realized, you know, if we have to transcend, if there was anything like transcending these levels of duality or these aspects of duality, we probably need to change our viewpoints. We probably need to examine how we're looking at our experience. And so for me, it's with a contemplative practice, it was very easy for me to see that when we get lost in our experience, when we totally get lost in our experience, what we start to experience is those sides of duality. And so for me, just even being able to see from a pulled back perspective, being able to see the parts of our experience that are dualistic, it occurred to me that it really does look like a dance. And in the book, I use the analogy of, you know, when you see two people, you may see two people fighting when you're far away. You see two people just doing this, you know, fighting. And then when you move closer, when you pay close attention, you may actually observe that there's a dance that's happening. And so in dances, you move from the left to the right. There's the one person holding the other person, and then there's what you know is there's kind of this left and right movement of every dance. And so somehow it feels like life, or I mean, if I could put a fling a story to this, is life itself seems like that dance. And that dance is the dance of I'll use the word divinity here. It's God dancing in all of these perceptions.
I love that a lot. And you know, I just got back from India, and in India everybody greets each other with namaste, which means from my God to your God, where it's a greeting. Oh, I like that piece. When we get back, the idea of finding beauty in the meaningless aspects of our life is in this book. And I want you to talk a little bit about that as soon as I get back from this break.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money, and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash, and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws. And we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call. So please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. If you just joined us, I'm speaking with Shay Kuinu. I'm getting it. And Shay is a native of Nigeria. He's I've seen all those degrees behind you, man.
No, I want to say that I'm at my cousin's, so these are not mine. So, yeah.
My goodness, wow, what did I miss here? Well, Shay's a great, he's an author, and he's a philosopher. He's a man that's in search of deep meaning and helping all of us explore the inner meaning of life. And, you know, in the book, you talk about the idea of finding beauty in meaningless areas of our life, and it's intriguing. Let's talk about that. How do you find beauty in the mundane, right? In things that are just, every day.
Yeah, I'll probably rewind to an experience I had, or an article really that I read probably 10 years ago that really, I would say that kept this ball rolling in terms of how I understand meaninglessness. In the article, the Medium article, which has been pulled down now, but the it was talking about the meaning of life. And the person said, wait, we assume that life has one meaning when it could have multiple meanings. And somehow that kind of twisted how I started to look at meaning. And eventually it occurred to me it's become so clear to me that we tend to assert meaning to life. And there has never been any instruction manual to say, okay, this right here is the meaning to life. So why do we keep getting hung up on how there has to be a particular meaning in life? And I find when we are able to really pull back and see clearly, what we see then is we are empowered then to create meaning to life of our own accord, and also being able to loosely understand that we are actually the ones creating it. So if the meaning that we're asserting to life, if it doesn't make sense, then change it.
Change it.
And so at the end of the day, it's just that the author of the book of Ecclesiastes, the Christian book of Ecclesiastes, he starts the book by saying, he starts the book by saying, meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. And, you know, when we look at this meaninglessness, this void of this voidless aspect of life itself, I think that there's an opportunity for us to then see that everything that we do, it doesn't even matter what it is, how mundane it is, washing dishes, walking your dog, that itself is we can then attribute this meaningless meaning to just anything. And that to me is,
I like that. And here's the good part, because I think we have to step back and look at how we define our purpose for doing anything. Okay. You know, and I like what you said, Shay. You know, if you've defined a story, you're living from some story or some meaning. And you know, and it's giving you great results in my book. Oh, that keep doing it, but realize that you're making it up. And if you're getting poor results, realize you're making it up so you can change this. And I like the part where we can step back from meaningless to be able to just go, well, wait a second. If it is meaningless, I'm the one putting meaning on it. That means I can make choice. Now, there's another piece to this, I think, that I like to explore with you, which from a, so there's individual purposes and stories. And then there's also this universe that, you know, whether you're studying quantum physics, quantum science, general science, neuroscience, string theory, whatever you study from a scientific point of view, or even if you study it from many of the native traditions or the Vedas or, you know, some of the ancient understanding of why we're here, there is meaning in the universe. We're all connected and there is meaning. What do you say to that?
You know, it's still oftentimes we have to be able to pick up our lenses of our own lenses. And with the lens that we put on, we're going to be able to see things the way we want to see it. I think where I talk about meaning and meaninglessness is if we remove the lens, if we totally remove the lens in which we perceive the world, we see that as just meaninglessness. But their glasses, the reasons why we have these lenses is so that we can enjoy putting those lenses up. And when we put those lenses up, what we then see is what we want to see. And so now I don't dispute that we could have collective experiences or we could have collective labels of meaning. But we have to also be able to see the, I think in one side of this, we have to see the illusion of it. At the other side, we have to see the play, the divinity, so to say, in the meaninglessness. And so in so doing, we can just honor everything. So the meaning to this conversation I'm having is it's a conversation, and it's a conversation that people are going to you know, either love or not love. People are going to say, what the heck are you guys talking about? Or oh, I really resonate with this. But what's the meaning? I think for me, ultimately, and where I or how I enjoy these things is, it's for me right now is just the enjoying of these conversations, and that itself we can attribute another meaning to.
I think you bring a really good point. Can we just enjoy without even having meaning? Right? We just enjoy being here. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I like that a lot, because I think people, a lot of time, myself included, want to put meaning on everything. I mean, I think I've almost been programmed that way. Everything has a meaning. Well, wait a second. What if it doesn't have a meaning? Why don't we just look, I've been practicing just being and looking in beauty in my life, right? Just being in beauty, right? And, you know, now there was meaning for that because I wanted to feel, you know, even more expansive. But what if I took off the meaning and just, you know, I just love to see beauty. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where we go with this.
Yeah. I think that oftentimes meaning is latched onto our experience. The moment we get into we get associated with time. And once again, I still see it as the illusion. The illusion of time is always about the past and the future. And oftentimes when we are in that swing of past and future, we totally forget the present. And so oftentimes we attribute meaning because we want to get somewhere. The meaning of XYZ is so that I can do this, or I can feel safe about this, or I can get some kind of reward in the future. Or the meaning of this is to avoid something that's, you know, that has happened in the past that we want to move away from. But when I find that when there's no longer the pull of the past and the future, and when this present moment, as pure as it is, as whole and complete as it is there, all we see is this very moment is just what we have. And it's stripped of meaning. It's just enjoyment. It's just the glorious dance.
Well, you know, here's the glorious dance part of it. You know, I always look for the practical side of it too. When we're in that area, when we're in that place where you just described, right? I'm going to pause because I'm going to take a break. I'm going to tell everybody what I experience when I'm in that place and how you can use it in your life. So I'll take a quick break. We'll talk back and I'll tell you that. I'll be right back.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kennedy Foster. I'll get right back to my guest in just a second, but I want to let you know that this show grows as a result of you. It's about, you know, I do these shows for you and for those that want to upshift their consciousness. And one of the ways that we help each other is by being in service to one another. So I'm hoping you know a family member, a friend, or somebody that today you can share the show with. Let them know about it. And also give us a like on our YouTube channel. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. I'm talking to Shay Cuino, and we are talking about consciousness. We're talking about his new book. And I was going to explain to you what I experience when I'm in those states that Shay just explained to us. And that's what we would call the zone, right? It's a zone. So it's when everything lets, you know, when, for instance, when I'm riding a bike, okay, when I am a cyclist. So when I'm cycling, I start out and, you know, I'm very present to everything that's going on and very conscious and very aware of everything. But some point in that ride, I get into this thing called the zone, and it's where I get so present in the moment. I'm not thinking about where I'm going or where I've been. I'm not thinking about time. I'm not thinking about my energy. I'm not thinking about it. I'm just there enjoying this experience, and that's the zone. When we can get into that zone, we do transcend time. And I'll tell you, there's Shay, this is my experience. When I'm in that zone, it transcends time and collapses time. Things will go by really quickly. It just, boom, like 2 hours go by and I'm riding a bike. I'm like, well, where'd the 2 hours go? And I've just been in this joyful place, right? Okay, you know, right? You know, it's that piece. So this has practical ways to do that, to do this. By the way, let me just put on the screen again. It's called the Glorious Dance, and we're all doing it, but are you aware of it? That's the key. Yeah. Hey, when readers read your book, Shay, what will they walk away with? What are the benefits to them, would you say?
I want to say that at the core of it, first of all, the book was written as a celebration of, more or less a celebration of the experience of living, and the illusion of our perception. And for me, what I want anyone to walk away with is to realize that everything is exactly as it should be. I know a lot of people would struggle with that, but really, when we get out of the way, or when we get out of our own way, that is actually revealed as truth.
Very good. You know, I want to explore in the book. In the book, you explore the dynamics of poetry and how that impacts our life. I happen to be working with a poet that has a new book out this year in Christmas time, and when I read the poems, a poem can have one word. It can, and say, you know, sunset or sunrise. And immediately my mind goes to that image, right? And it takes me out of this space I'm in and puts me in the universe, right? That's just my experience. I'm just throwing that out there. Why did you include poetry in the book?
Coincidentally, I had the last poem in the book, if I'm not wrong, is called, I wrote God's Favorite Hobby is Poetry. I would say that what I did in the book was use poetry as a form of contemplation, or as a gateway into contemplation about who we are. So a lot of the poems, they really point back to our direct experience of living. And I used I had about 10 chapters or thereabouts in the book, and the 10 chapters addressed certain issues of our experience. And then I used the poems as just contemplative phrasings for us to get back into the enjoyment of our own being.
Well, God's hobby, that's pretty powerful. So poetry is God's hobby.
And if you look at poetry is for the most part, in poetry, what we try to do is use very few words to pull us back to an experience, unlike prose or just regular writing, where it's like, okay, someone is trying to describe something in their own experience. Sometimes with poetry, you're bringing attention back to yourself, because as you're reading what somebody is writing, you're also trying to embody what was the author saying, or what did the author see that made them put these words in the exact ways that they did. So for a lot of the poems that I wrote, I designed them to also be a little bit reflective, so that you can go into your own experience of whether it's the illusion of our perception of ourselves, or the illusion of resistance, or the enjoyment of play.
You know, do we need, I'm thinking of my audience right now, and some of you have never written a poem, right? You know, and some of you are going, well, there's, you know, I'm sure there's a certain structure I have to follow, and a certain prose, and is that true? Can we just start expressing our
this is kind of where I go rogue to say, what are the rules to anything? Really, what are the rules? I mean, while there can be, if you remember the Japanese concept of shuhari, you know, where you learn something, you get perfect in the thing, and then you break the rules, you know, when we break the rules, then we find, you know, you can create something totally different. So with my poems, or with some of the poems that I wrote in the book, there are some free form verses, and there are some iambic pentameters, and, you know, I had some with the regular rhyme schemes. But ultimately, I don't get myself bogged down with the technicalities. I think for me, what's important, and really generally in life, is for us to be able to realize that the only boundaries we create are self-limiting. We create those boundaries for ourselves.
Well, you know, I sense too that you know, if we do a good job, you know, writing poetry, you know, we'll probably get poor results from an audience. Like, if you want to be out with an audience to read it and whatever, you might get poor results. If you do a great job, you get good results. But if you do an outstanding job, you probably, you know, really connect with people. So I do think there's a part of us that, you know, in the collective consciousness, right? That and maybe you don't have this in the beginning to start writing poetry. You just write to write, because I know if you start to write a poem right now, this today, you know, it you might judge it. You might, you know, you might not like it. You know, you might change words around and everything. Ultimately, it's your experience for you. But then if you want to, you know, maybe I'm going to be a poet, you know, then you get to learn some of the rules, and then let go of the rules, like we're talking about here, and find your own expression within the realm of the poetry community. And there's so much expression within it, within the community. It's not about you have to do it this way or that way, or we won't even accept you, right? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would also echo some of your own sentiments. I think that the most important thing is to write for yourself, and somehow from the outflow, the outburst of the excitement of what's been written, then you may find someone who can resonate, or someone who loves what you've written. But I know people who, the moment they see poetry, would just totally switch off, because, well, I can't, you know, I hate poetry, you know. So I think it's... at some point, one has to think about themselves and what you enjoy, and then you'll find your audience. I look at the poetry of people like, is it Rappi Kaur? And I have a friend who says these are just Instagram labels. These are not poetry. But then she's a New York Times bestseller, you know, and her poetry is just like, some of them are just one sentences or two lines, you know. So I find that it's at the core of it, it's really, and this is why I still go back to this, to the points that sometimes we have to be able to break the rules that our general traditions have laid down, so that we can actually, you know, create new rules, and maybe somehow we become trendsetters.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think trendsetters are connected deeply to their soul.
Yeah.
And their unique, your own uniqueness, your own expression of the divine into the world, right? We all have different gifts, talents, abilities, ways we think, the ways we are programmed, and all, you know, the what we read, what we don't read. Everything is so unique, right? But there's art to bringing that into the world. And whether you're a painter, or whether you're a skateboarder, whether you're a surfer, or whether you are an architect, right? There's certain ways to be able to express, or a poet, express yourself. And it doesn't almost matter what vehicle you use, meaning poetry or writing a book, or developing a building, or, you know, it doesn't really matter. What matters is, in my world, is your own growth, your own experience, your own expansion, and bringing that divinity within the realm of the world to, from my point of view, life is chiefly service. So not only are you helping you, but when somebody sees what you're doing, they go, wow, this is beyond humanity. This is beyond human capacity. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. And if you notice, everything always starts from your own self, because often I find in creating art, people oftentimes want to satisfy others first, but we gotta start from inside first, and then it's from the inside out that we're able to give, and we're able to pour out ourselves. And it, for me, with the purity of what one is pouring out, is somehow we then begin to see those who somehow it feels like life then begins to find those who are able to also drink of that spring that's coming out of one.
Yes. Yes. And so the quest, I would say, the quest is to start. It's to start. If there's something in your heart and you're like, okay, maybe I can let go of all the rules that I put into my life about, you know, hey, I'm not an artist. I'm not a writer. I'm not a poet. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not. It's like, I'm not an architect. And maybe you're not, but maybe with inside of you, you are. And, you know, I think we get caught up in this right, wrong. This is my experience. This is my strength. This is what I feel like doing. I don't feel, it's a duality again, right? And that stops us.
Exactly. You know, I find that we're the ones who create the limits of what we can do, and all of that is still going to be part of how we if we don't understand how the mind creates these dualistic experiences, then all we are just going to be doing is sitting in suffering rather than actually flourishing the way that life wants us to flourish.
I really love that. I'm just thinking on stage, you know, I'm thinking about when I first started doing these shows, right? I was very stiff, and I didn't want to be a talking head, but I just wanted to talk in a certain way. And then there were certain things I could say and didn't say, you know, I had all these rules, right? What happens when we start to let go of our rules is the soul shines through in greater ways. And my description of what that looks like is that when we, and I'll speak for myself, my soul, this brilliant part inside of me that's there, this joy that's there, was covered up with, it's kind of like a rust over the soul. It was covered up with shoulds and have-tos and ignorance and musts, and programming from my parents and my society and my schools and my friends and some of my life experiences and, you know, guilt, shame, remorse, you know, whatever, all this stuff. And when you can start to let go of that and step into the brilliance of your soul, and then things start to shift differently. I know you do that. I see the joy inside of you. So you've had gone through that process.
Yeah. Coincidentally, I had a chapter in my book called Resistance, and I used the analogy of if you're driving and you put your hand or your legs on the gas and you put your legs on the brake pedals, what happens is your car can't really move. And what's happening is you're probably putting some stress on the engine and your tires. And it seems that's what we do when we play all the should games. What starts to happen is we begin to experience resistance. And so the cure for resistance is just letting go. And a lot of times we don't want to let go because we want to control. But then the question is, how's that been working so far?
yeah, and how's that lot like your life? You know, it's I like that letting go. You know, and sometimes, you know, here's the thing. So you get an insight. Oh, you know, for example, I'd like to write a book, right? And then the mind kicks in. Well, if you don't know anything about writing books, if you write a book, it's going to take a lot of time, energy, and effort. You know, who are you to say anything? This mind starts going on. Sometimes you just have to go, shut up and take action. All right, today I'm just going to write.
In fact, I should also say that I have a chapter in my book called The Dance of Thoughts. And I talk about how thoughts, like we need to pay attention to exactly what thoughts are. I find that there is a maybe because we've experienced thoughts, we've never really paused to see that they just float. We perceive them, they disappear, and somehow we've begun to see that those thoughts are ourselves. Meanwhile, they're not. So when we see that our thoughts, they just manifest, they appear and then disappear. You see that you can question every single thought. And
I love that. That's in the book, and I think we need to really understand thought because, you know, thought is not individual. Thought is universal. We connect into a database of thought. But if you don't know how to control your thoughts, you don't know how to focus your thoughts, then you just have these random thoughts going on all the time, right? And you know, it's like the monkey mind, right? Some people tell me their mind is a dangerous place to be because they have all these thoughts. They can't even shut down the thoughts, right? So I'm so glad you wrote about that in the book. And we're almost out of time here. So the book is The Glorious Dance. Remember this title, The Glorious Dance. You got to get this book. Just the title alone makes you go, yes, I want to continue my glorious dance in life. And I need some ways to understand how to do that. And that is exactly what Sheku Inu has put into his book. So I hope you'll get it. Shay, thank you, man. Thank you. Final thoughts for our audience.
It was my pleasure being here.
mine to have you on the show. You're brilliant. Any final thoughts for our audience?
If I would leave the thought, I would say it, with any thoughts, it's really when we pay attention, when we really do pay attention, we realize that life is happening on its own accord. And somehow we begin to see that there's something else that's brewing in the background, and it's all of life is God's dance.
Yeah. And maybe what's burning in the background is God. Maybe that's the part that we need to really focus on, because it's that place where who's observing the thoughts that you're having? Who is that? What is that? Where do these thoughts come from? You know, these are deep questions that people, I believe, would benefit by buying your book and being able to contemplate them. Yeah.
Don't get me started on that.
Well, we'll have to do it. I'm out of time this time, but thank you, man. I really appreciate
thank you so much.
very much success with your book and everything you're doing. I really appreciate you being here. Thank you, Shay. And thank all of you for listening to The Voice of Courage today. I pray that you will continue to search for and seek to be all you can be by seeing the unseeable, knowing the unknowable, and doing the impossible. And you can do that. Till next time.